This is episode 31 of The Fifth Estate, John Schindler on Donald Trump and the Russians. Welcome to The Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso, and I wanted to let you know that this episode of The Fifth Estate is brought to you by our friends at Simply Safe. Now that it's 2017, maybe you're making some New Year's resolutions. Here's one I think that you'll really like. It's easy to keep, and your whole family benefits. Protect your home with our favorite award-winning home security, Simply Safe. They've extended their huge holiday sale for the new year. $200 off the best-selling Defender Security Package. It's a 17-piece system of pure protection with around-the-clock monitoring and police dispatch. The minute your home faces danger, you know about it, and Simply Safe calls the police. Simply Safe was built by a Harvard-educated engineer. His friends got robbed, and when they couldn't find home security that wasn't a ripoff, he started this company. Around the holidays, there's always a rise in burglaries. Make sure your home stays safe. There's no long-term contract. No hidden fees, nothing to hold you back. Now you can get this award-winning security system for $200 off. Simply Safe has never had deals this big. Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SIMPLISAFE.com/ricochet. But hurry, it's a limited time offer. Save $200 at simplysafe.com/ricochet. So this week, this is the first episode of 2017, and it is my pleasure to welcome back my co-host, Mr. Neil Dewing. How are you, sir?
I have emerged from hibernation, Jay. I'm ready and raring to go.
Amazing. And Neil, before we get started here, what's one of the things that we love most about our listeners? And
well, the fact they listen to the podcast and say nice things about us, Jay, that's primarily, I think, what you're getting at. And we'd like to encourage them to do that again in 2017. Carry that forward. Make this your New Year's resolution, folks. If you could, please visit us on our iTunes page. Leave us a rating and a review if you are so inclined.
Yes, we always love that kind of thing. So big news here as in the last couple of weeks, of course, and even ever since Donald Trump has been elected, has been all the news about Russian hacking and Donald Trump's kind of seemingly and his team's refusal to kind of admit certain things. And, you know, we don't really know the depth of it all. And this is one of those shows where, you know, we always talk about our friend Tom Nichols, who says, you know, there's the death of expertise. So we said, you know what, if we're going to talk about this, let's bring on an expert to talk about it.
Absolutely.
And we've done that. And John Schindler is here. You know him as 20 Committee on Twitter is joining us for the show to talk about this. John, thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Great to be here.
Before we get started, John, go ahead and tell everybody kind of about you and what you do and your background and you know, to kind of give an understanding of why we brought you on to discuss this issue.
Yeah, I'm a journalist and gadfly now, but for many years I was in the intelligence community. I was with the National Security Agency, although I served in also in joint assignments with the Central Intelligence Agency. I've also been Naval Intelligence. My background is mostly in counterintelligence, counterespionage with a side of counterterrorism. And I've been all over the sort of Russian espionage story for years, ever since Ed Snowden defected to Moscow in mid-2013. And I've gotten a lot of grief for, you know, being a little too harsh on the Russians. And I hate to say it, but it turned out I was right. And a lot of my warnings about getting serious about Russian espionage and propaganda, I told everyone this is going to be a problem, and it became a big problem in 2016, certainly. And I think everyone knows that, and the Democrats are freaking out. A lot of Republicans aren't sure what to do. But, you know, I'm one of the very few people who's been in the real world of spies and stuff and is able to speak to some extent openly. I don't talk about secret stuff that I did, obviously, but I certainly have an opinion on a lot of intelligence stuff. And I share it with the public to the extent that I can. So here I am.
There you go. And so let's talk about to kind of jump into that. Let's talk about the intelligence report that was released on Friday And Donald Trump met with the intelligence community to kind of go over this. Give us a little background of what was in that, what it contained, what it talked about, what impact it has. You know, kind of give us a 50,000-foot view of that.
Yeah, what happened was our big three intelligence agencies, CIA, NSA, and the FBI, put together a comprehensive top-secret plus-plus-plus report, which has been shared with Trump and President Obama and a few selected officials, which explains what the Russians did in 2015, 2016 to influence our election. Of course, it's impossible to say what influence this operation had. That's maybe an unanswerable question. It's certainly not a question intelligence agencies can answer, if anyone can. But it makes the case that very strongly that for the highest levels of the Russian government, approved by Vladimir Putin himself, they made the decision to hack into emails of leading American politicians on both parties, by the way, not just the Democrats, and use some of those purloined emails to harm Hillary Clinton because they preferred Trump over her. Certainly, Putin definitely had a vendetta against Hillary Clinton from her time as Secretary of State, and they generically preferred Trump, and the information was weaponized via WikiLeaks, which is, despite what they claim to be, has been a Russian intelligence front for several years at least. And they put it out there. Of course, Donald Trump, you know, asked the Russians to hack more emails if they could, and apparently they did. This is big, big story. What's gotten a lot of attention is that the unclassified version, which was released to the public Friday afternoon last, was pretty vague. Strong conclusions, no evidence really, I won't say none, not much evidence to back it up. And that's because the evidence, unfortunately, is highly classified, largely signals intelligence from NSA and our British partners, GCHQ. But we do have a very good view of what happened, and my friends at NSA have, you know, confirmed that for me. The problem is, to protect sources and methods, very little information was shared. I think they were a little too cautious. I think given the enormous importance of this story to the country, the intelligence community should have shared maybe a little more information, but they didn't, and that's what it is. There could be more forthcoming. Our intelligence bosses are going to testify again before Congress this week in open session, and perhaps more will come out. I think it should, because given the weight of this story, the public needs to feel confident that the intelligence community knows what it's talking about.
And John, I think that one of the problems with, you know, not releasing all these details, of course, you've got the you know, security issues, but it does make it difficult for the public at large to trust what the intelligence community is saying and to understand the depth of this Russian hacking. Now, you know, I've been sort of, as I said, hibernating for the last month and a half and intentionally avoiding much of the news. So I'm playing catch up in a big way. But it seems to me that this is already falling along the same familiar lines where the usual suspects are downplaying it and some other usual suspects are maybe playing it up too much. Would you say that one side or the other is misreading this, or is this really as serious?
I think it actually is that serious. Let me explain the context. What has happened politically is obviously the Democrats are on the warpath about this because, of course, they're going to be. This makes it look like the Russians threw the election to Hillary. I'm sorry, against Hillary to Trump. Whether that's true or not, it certainly has that appearance. I understand why the left is, you know, howling gigantic curses. What they don't want to talk about, of course, and I've written extensively about this, is that the complete collapse of our security under President Obama, gross negligence from the White House, allowed this to happen. This is the White House that refused to fight Russian propaganda, that did not take serious actions against the Russians in what I call the spy war after Snowden, didn't do enough WikiLeaks, set the stage for this disaster. On the other hand, I've got to really say to a lot of my Republican friends, you know, be careful. You're gloating about this. They have your emails too, and they will release them when it is advantageous for them to do so, when they're upset at you, not the Democrats. And it's really distasteful for me to find characters on the right, some of them quite well known, regurgitating 40 years of leftist lies about the intelligence community. They're all corrupt. They don't know what they're doing. WMD, 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 to make this pain go away for the president-elect. It does not help either that the president-elect and his mouthpiece have fully engaged in this, calling the intelligence community incompetent, constantly reminding of the 2003 debacle over Iraqi WMD. This is really becoming very politically painful on all sides. And I've striven very hard to take – I'm not interested in the partisan politics of this, frankly, at all. I'm interested in this as an intelligence problem, as a national security problem. And both sides are messing it up right now. But I've got to say the Republicans are lying a little more right now because most of them just want this to go away. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, not all Republicans. Some senators have been very upfront. Senator McCain, Senator Graham, Republicans who are very on the warpath about this, and I hope they stay on this because this issue needs to be resolved.
I suppose from Putin's perspective, more to the good.
More chaos is always good.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, I don't think they ever expected Trump to win. I think this was just a way to give Hillary Clinton a very hard time and do her damage. You know, they didn't release all the emails they have. I'm quite sure of that. They were holding some in reserve in case she became president, as they, me, I bet you guys too, pretty much everyone thought was going to happen. But chaos is great. Chaos works wonderfully for the Russians. If we're all fighting amongst each other and not paying attention to other issues, that's great for Moscow.
Lovely.
Well, let's jump into the WikiLeaks part of this. You know, Julian Assange has tried to say that Russia was not their source for this information,
yeah.
Which seems to be kind of ridiculous for him to say.
It is ridiculous.
Okay.
But if you notice what he actually said, it's very lawyerly. He said, "I didn't get it from the Russian state." Well, of course not. A military intelligence officer, didn't show up in uniform at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. This was done through intermediaries, what spies call cutouts. So he's technically not lying, I'm sure, when saying, oh, the Russian state didn't directly give this to me. Of course they didn't, but they used intermediaries. They indirectly did, and he knows it. He's not a very good liar. And the wheels have really come off the enterprise of WikiLeaks in the last couple of years because Julian's such a strange character. You know, he endorses anti-Semites. He's become even more vividly anti-American. This is not going to end well for him, and I think he knows that at some level.
And what if anything can, and this is where I defer to your expertise on that, what can, if anything, can our intelligence community do to kind of, what are we doing about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange? And is there any way to keep them, keep him from releasing this kind of information in the future, or to kind of lock him down? Or is that something that really we don't have much control over?
We don't have much ability to stop that. But what we can do and should do is pick up where we left off. You know, President Obama at the last minute expels 35 Russian intelligence officers in the United States, which should have been done 3 years ago after Snowden showed up in Moscow and the Russians gave him sanctuary. That's how the spy war is supposed to work. I guess better late than never. But we can make it clear from what we know that WikiLeaks is nothing but a pawn of the Kremlin. Anyone who takes them seriously is a fool at this point. They are simply, there is a Russian hand behind the Assange puppet. And as long as people are clear on that, okay, we can't stop them, but know who they are, know what their agenda is. And I think the U.S. government has not done enough. I was very disappointed, for instance, that WikiLeaks was left out of the President Obama's sanctions 2 weeks ago against the Kremlin for their misdeeds in the spy war this year. I bet my bottom dollar there's a stack of sealed federal indictments against Julian Assange for his participation in espionage against the United States. Make it public. Why hide it at this point? Make it very clear that if he ever sets foot outside of that embassy, we're going to demand his extradition immediately. No, he wants to play hardball. Let's play hardball.
It's interesting. And what is it with, and maybe you can explain this, or if it's just complete pandering to Donald Trump, is this sudden defense of Julian Assange by people who were, 4 or 5 years ago were saying that he was a traitor. Now, all of a sudden, Sarah Palin, I apologize to Julian Assange. I said, I couldn't believe I saw that.
Well, I gave, people a lot of grief back in 2008, back before I was on Twitter, about saying what a complete idiot and sycophant the former governor of Alaska is. I'm sorry. You were right. I was wrong. Sarah Palin perhaps has showed her true colors, as have several Republican prominents who, as you said, they hated Julian Assange. Julian Assange has cost American lives. He's gotten Americans killed. There's no doubt about this. The U.S. government's on the record about that. And, they're complete thugs in the pay of Vladimir Putin. And we have prominent Republicans saying what a great guy he is. This is sickening to me. This is horrifying stuff.
That is pretty terrifying. It bodes not well for the future, John.
It doesn't.
what do you I mean, is it going to be 4 years of this?
I sure hope not. But unless we wind up with President Pence somehow, I'm afraid it's going to be. It's going to be lies, more lies, crazy tweets, picking fights with people, threatening American citizens on Twitter. It's crazy town.
Well,
it's crazy town.
What do you think it is about Trump specifically getting into fights with the intelligence community? What's that about?
I think that's about several things. One of which is Trump really knows absolutely nothing about intelligence and national security. I mean, nothing. My cat's better informed. And when you take that with the fact that the only guy talking about it has been Mike Flynn, the retired Army three-star general, who is every bit the hothead that the president-elect is, and they feed off each other. And Flynn has given him his take on the intelligence community, which is one based on anger and resentment because he was fired justly by President Obama as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. His career ended in tatters, and he's been out for payback ever since. And so that animus against the mainstream intelligence community comes through there. And, you know, people who don't understand the IC kind of present this as partisan politics. It's really not that at all. It's not about ideology. You can find every flavor of political views in the IC from, you know, Bernie Sanders over to the right of Donald Trump. And so stereotypes don't help. It's not that an agency favors a politician. This is about turf. It's about loyalty. It's about getting the job done. And Trump has publicly, repeatedly called the IC essentially stupid and dishonest. He's called them being pawns of President Obama, which they certainly are not. They're not fans of President Obama, let me tell you. Not at all. But they're going to like President Trump even less if he doesn't change his tune very soon.
I mean, long term, do you see this damaging our intelligence capabilities? I mean, why
sure.
would you
Absolutely.
Enter a career in which the prominent the most prominent politician in the country is constantly deriding your efforts and calling you and your profession incompetence?
Right. It's not going to attract good people. People will be leaving in droves, not to mention that, you know, they've talked about reorganizing the intelligence community, and there's an excellent case for reorganizing the intelligence community. Do not misunderstand me, but that's not what they're going to do. They're not going to see greater efficiencies. This is going to be Mike Flynn getting revenge on the IC and firing people he doesn't like, and that is the worst kind of politicization, where you're not willing to listen to contrary opinions, and you shut down people who try. I mean, at that point, what's the IC for? I mean, we collected a lot of great information, but if the White House, you know, is going to punish you for saying it, guess what? No one's going to say it. And that could lead to disastrous decision making by the Trump White House, unfortunately.
You don't see any prospect of, say, intelligence community members going rogue, to quote the former vice presidential candidate and governor of Alaska, but going rogue and perhaps leaking important information, going through other channels
They already have. I mean, there was a major leak, which the White House made very clear was not from them, late last week, reported by NBC, about very high-quality signals intelligence from NSA that informed the community, intelligence community's decision-making about Russian hacking. So it's already started. And look, when the spies get treated badly by the White House, they start meeting journalists in discreet parking garages and telling them things. And this is already going on, okay? Remember, the only president who came even close to this level of animosity about the spies coming into the office, and Trump's way beyond this, but the only real president is Nixon, who came into the White House hating CIA in particular. And basically just wouldn't deal with them. Well, we all know how that worked out for Tricky Dick, don't we? And that really could happen again. The Trump has some very, very dark secrets, which are known to some folks in the intelligence community. I saw some of it personally. I've been informed of other parts of it by people I've long known and trusted. And these are things Donald Trump really, really doesn't want winding up in the front page of the Washington Post, but it's going to if he keeps, in essence, abusing the spies just because he can.
Interesting. So let's switch gears a little bit away from so much for the national security aspect. Well, I mean, it's still kind of connected, but looking out over the next 4 years, you know, you had George W. Bush try to kind of change the relationship with Russia. You had the famous Obama-Clinton reset with Russia, and now you have, you know, Trump coming in, who's just, you know, almost there's adoration there for Putin, which is really strange. So what are we kind of looking at? And is Putin kind of sitting back there kind of smiling, knowing that he's playing the Trump people for fools? And what are we looking at in terms of, you know, foreign policy and national security with Russia for the next 4 years?
Well, the president-elect just this weekend, after getting the top-secret briefing about Russian malfeasance, was out there on Twitter again saying, we need to be buddy-buddy with the Russians. Why can't we be friends with the Russians? You're stupid, in quotes, if you don't think we can be buddy-buddy with Putin. I mean, hey, I'd love a better relationship with Russia. Russia has several thousand nuclear weapons pointed at the United States. I'd really like to reduce tensions. But one, that implies that Putin wants to reduce tensions, which I see no evidence of. The current current crisis between Russia and the West meets his domestic agenda quite nicely and diverts the public from troubling economic news at home. And second of all, this Trumpian sort of reality TV show deal that we're going to, like, you know, shake Putin's hand and maybe hunt a bear together or something, and then and we're going to be besties, is juvenile. That's not how the world works. And America and Russia have strategic issues, some of which could be in alignment, certainly, some of which are going to be in competition almost no matter what we do. And it's the job of our government to keep that competition not involving shooting guns at each other, but spying on each other and doing nasty things in cyberspace, not hurling nuclear missiles. And that's doable. But this notion we're going to have a second reset with Moscow because, you know, the president-elect has sort of a man crush on the guy in the Kremlin is silly. That's just not how the world actually works. And the Russians know this. The Russians view Trump as a weakling. The KGB and their intelligence services have been interested in Trump for 3 decades. They know all about him. They view him as exploitable, as their guy. We'll see if that actually holds it up when he's in the office, when he's in the big chair and has the nuclear football. But I think the notion that just because the president changes, our policies toward Russia are all going to change is simply not true. The Pentagon will resist this. Even the State Department will resist some of this. The intelligence community will resist it, and Congress will resist it. So Trump can have all the man crush on Putin he wants. It's not going to change the world.
Okay, great. All right, so what we're going to do, we're going to take a break right now. Quick break. Neil Dewing is going to tell you about Blue Apron.
Hey, Fifth Estate fans, Neil Dewing here with a question for you. Do you like eating? Most people do, but if you're having trouble finding time to cook good meals with fresh ingredients at home, let me tell you about Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. And they do this by supporting a more sustainable food system, by setting the highest standards for the ingredients they send you, and by building a community of home chefs. Surely this is a decadent luxury only available to the rich. No. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals for you, for two, for four, for more. So choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or you can let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. They don't repeat recipes within a year, so you will never get bored. And it's easy to do this. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. There's no excuse, people. So check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/fifth. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/fifth.
And we're back. Neil?
Yes, indeed. And so, John, we've kind of, I think, laid out some of the problems that we have with the president-elect and the intelligence community, some of the major issues that we are currently facing. So what I wanted to do is sort of turn the conversation to the future a little bit more and talk about three-part question here. What do you think should happen? What do you think realistically can happen? And what do you think in all likelihood will happen to address these issues and the problem of Russia? So let's start with what you think should happen with Russia and the new administration.
Well, in my fantasy, Trump gets the big 3-hour intelligence community presentation, highly classified, which explains to him all the nasty things the Russians are doing against the United States, our allies, and our interests around the world. He wakes up and says, gosh, I didn't realize this was such a serious problem. We need to do something about it. And doing something about it starts with shoring up our alliances, making clear that we have NATO's back because deterrence works. The Russians are not insane. They're not looking to cause World War III over the Baltics, but it could happen if they think they're not going to get pushback. Make sure they understand they're going to get real pushback immediately. And that will calm the Russians down on some of these issues. Second of all, fight back in the spy war. That means, above all, taking counterintelligence seriously, getting better at cybersecurity, making clear to the Russians there will be a penalty paid in the spy war for their aggressive games that they have been playing against us That's Snowden, that's WikiLeaks, that's, you know, disseminating stolen U.S. government information on the internet for giggles. Give them a taste of their own medicine. We can do the same thing to them. Not quite as easily, but it can be done. Do that. And three, start fighting back against Kremlin propaganda. The Obama administration flatly refused to do this. In 2015, a tiny State Department organization was set up to combat Russian propaganda. Not disseminate our propaganda, but simply point out when the Russians are using disinformation, they're using lies. We did this during the Cold War. We became very adept at fighting it. Something called the Active Measures Working Group was established in D.C. under President Reagan. Active Measures, Aktivni Meropriyati, in Russian is the proper Russian spy term for the kinds of propaganda they're using against us. Debunk it, and Obama wouldn't do that. Well, Congress has funded up to $80 million a year in effort to fight back against Russian propaganda. Well, start doing it. Start doing it. And my fear, of course, is that the new White House will seek to de facto crush this effort. They can't openly subvert Congress, but they'll try and make it ineffective. Don't. Make it clear to the Russians. This is a multinational exercise. This isn't just the U.S. government. This is NGOs. This is all kinds of NATO Western governments around the world. You know, make clear we're not going to let the Russians tell dirty lies about us. And, you know, I mean, really, it was Ukrainian Nazi Jews who shot down the 777 over Ukraine a couple years back. That's kind of crazy stuff. No, we actually know what happened. Here's what happened. Start fighting the lies. So that's a three-pronged effort that I'd like to see. Shore up deterrence in our alliances, fight back in the spy war, and start combating Russian propaganda where it impacts us and our interests. Because it's a fire hose of it. It's a huge amount.
Fascinating. I mean, so realistically, do we have the capability to do those things? Do we have the political will to do those things?
Congress does. Whether the White House does, Obama hasn't, because he's Obama. I mean, the horrible story here is that for the last 3+ years, Obama has been derelict in pushing back and stopping the Russians, and Hillary actually paid the price. I mean, someone should ask him why he allowed Hillary Clinton to get taken out by the Russians this way. If I were Hillary, I'd be none too pleased. So Congress is on side. The institutional government, State Department, Defense, intelligence community are perfectly capable of doing this. They'll need to hire some new people, bring in some new blood. But this is all doable. This isn't like building the atom bomb in 1943. This is much easier stuff. We need to regenerate the skill sets, but it can be done. What is lacking is will. And my concern is that the new White House will, for very different reasons, be just as derelict about this as the one leaving office has been.
Mm-hmm. So what do you expect will actually happen in the next four to eight years to push back?
The worst case scenario is that Trump's erratic behavior could blunder us into actually no-kidding war with Russia or China, by the
really?
Way. Or, hey, why not Russia and China, right? As his comments can easily be taken not the way he may intend them, and as we saw with his dalliance with the Taiwan issue, which caused Beijing to completely lose their minds, anyone who remotely understands the PRC, and I'm not a China expert, but I understand a little bit about the PRC, understands that's an issue they're going to go to the mat over. Why are you taunting them? Despite his great admiration for Putin, he could easily cause a huge problem with the Russians too, and the Russians, you know, if they feel their backs are to the wall, will push back, and that could get ugly very fast. I think we're going to see a lot of muddling through. I think if James Mattis becomes the Secretary of Defense, General Mad Dog, whom I think the world of, if he becomes Secretary of Defense, and he may not because he's getting a lot of pushback from particularly Mike Flynn and other people who are in Trump's inner circle. But if he does, we can see the Pentagon start to embrace reality about the Russians. They're well on the way there already, by the way. I mean, they've been shoring up our alliances as quietly as they can. Without much help from the Obama White House. So we'll see more of that. State Department knows what they want here. The IC, the intelligence community, is pretty solid here as well. But, the White House may cause great difficulty. There's no, Mike Flynn can easily interfere, even though the president's special assistant for national security affairs, which is his actual job, they're heading up the National Security Council, doesn't have a lot of real authority, but he has the power to talk to the president and see what the president is told and kind of massage that. So he can't tell the Pentagon or State Department what to do, but he can run a lot of interference in ways that would be beneficial to Mike Flynn and probably not the country, in my view.
So you're talking about Mike Flynn, and you said something about General Mattis. What do you think overall? I mean, obviously, you're not a fan of Flynn. You aren't a fan of Mattis.
No, I'm certainly not.
But what about the rest of, like, the national security apparatus that Trump has built put around him? What do you think of like Mike Pompeo and some of the others? Players?
Pompeo's fine, and I think Pompeo probably will be a pretty good CIA director. But you know, it's please note that when he's named Dan Coats, the former Indiana senator, as the director of national intelligence, and you got to read that. I mean, Coats is, to be honest, he's an old guy. He is, as Trump would say, low energy at this point. He's been put in as a DNI because he will not give any serious resistance to Mike Flynn. Mike Flynn, de facto, will be running the intelligence community to an alarming extent. I'm convinced and afraid. And he'll get pushback from Mattis on that, but because the Defense Department actually controls the lion's share of the intelligence community. But the fight now between Mattis and Flynn is about key Pentagon positions, particularly the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, which is critical here, because that guy or gal will oversee a lot of the IC on a day-to-day basis. And Flynn wants his crony in there, and Mattis is pushing back. I think there's a real possibility if Mattis keeps getting pushed around, he will not continue with his nomination, which would be a disaster for the country.
Wow, that's a pretty big one. Because from what I've seen, there's like generally universal praise for Mattis as a defense secretary, and so it'd
pretty
be
much, I mean, he's as universal in praise as anyone's going to get in D.C. I think that's the first statement. Yeah.
So the stakes obviously are huge, and I think that one of the things that kind of worries me about this, and you brought up the prospect of us getting into an actual war with Russia, and whether in, you know, proxy wars or whatever, but an actual war with Russia and China, you know, and yeah. one of the things that I think people really sort of don't like to focus on is the fact that both of those nations have nuclear weapons, same as we do. And I don't think we've been in an all-out war with another nuclear-armed state. Correct me if I'm wrong, but since the end of World War II, it's all been the proxy wars, that sort of thing.
Correct. So, that's absolutely right. This is very different. Yeah.
We're going into uncharted territory here. Not necessarily uncharted. The Cold War was very tense, but we're getting into a point where this is something that I kind of see international trade having an impact. You know, Trump's rhetoric on China and trade could actually have an effect on our other foreign policy, because I do consider trade
Absolutely.
Policy to be foreign policy. It could push China away from us just when we need them as a counterbalance against Russia.
Correct.
And it could really, really go tits up.
Very quickly and very painfully, and I don't think the public is worried enough. And let me tell you why. As you said, we've not had a direct confrontation with a nuclear power before. And with both Russia and China, there's real cause for concern there. One, let's talk Russia. Russia is actually, in many ways, a very weak state. It has serious economic, demographic problems. In terms of population and the size of its economy, Russia's basically Mexico. Now, it's Mexico with several thousand nuclear weapons. But they are, despite massive investment in their conventional military, they're still recovering from the Soviet collapse in military terms. And they're really only a great power because of those several thousand nuclear weapons. And let me make very clear, Russian doctrine is to use nuclear weapons in circumstances that we never would. I mean, our line is basically, we're going to use nukes if you use nukes first. And we'll never say that, but in effect, that's U.S. policy. Or if we thought an imminent nuclear strike was about to happen, we might preempt it. The Russians have no such break on their behavior, and they state this in their defense doctrine quite openly. If they feel they need to use tactical nuclear weapons, theater nuclear weapons, to gain advantage in the military sphere, they will do it. They even consider it just a bigger boom in a lot of ways, which to Americans and Westerners sounds completely crazy. But the fact that they put nuclear-capable missiles in the Kaliningrad exclave next to Warsaw is a clear indication of what they mean. So the Russians could push the nuclear button much more easily than we ever would. And then that gets into horrible issues of, can it then be contained? Are we going to have nuclear strikes all around the world? Horrible, horrible things. If that doesn't scare you enough, let me scare you even more. China. Let's take China. And I don't approve of a lot of Chinese bully behavior in East Asia, but I think China is ultimately a manageable problem if we choose to manage it and don't do things like needlessly upset them about Taiwan, which has no effect. Let's talk China. China is a rising peer competitor in the waters off East Asia. Without getting into top secret war planning, it is nonetheless perfectly obvious, based on Defense Department statements and what they say, that to defeat the Chinese Navy, let's say in the South China Sea, which the U.S. Navy plans for every day, we would have to strike the Chinese mainland, hitting command and control nodes, missile sites, whatever, to protect our carriers, especially. This would require air and missile strikes on the Chinese homeland. Not cities, but bombs would be falling on Chinese soil on the first day of the war. China has made abundantly clear, time and again, they state this openly, that any strikes of any kind on the Chinese homeland, not a Chinese ship at sea, not an airplane 500 miles out, strikes on the Chinese homeland will be countered by strikes on the American homeland. Period. It is not negotiable. The People's Liberation Army, as of today, has no conventional weapons that can strike the continental United States. None whatsoever. They do not have that capability. They're working on it, but they're years away. The only thing that can strike the United States is a nuclear ballistic missile if you're China. So I fully expect that on day one of any war with China, the U.S. Air Force will conduct strikes on the Chinese mainland, on command control nodes, air bases, missile bases to protect the U.S. Navy in the waters off China. And within hours, a nuclear missile, nuclear missiles will take out most of the Western United States. That is my prediction. How do you feel about that?
Not great, John.
I think he just ruined Neil's birthday.
Well, this is the kind of thing why taunting the Chinese is so dangerous. The Chinese aren't crazy. The Central Military Commission isn't sitting there thinking about how they can launch nuclear war against the United States. Of course not. But don't put them in a position where the only weapon they have to use is a nuclear weapon. And I am terrified that is what Trump is going to do, utterly inadvertently.
Wow. That's one hell of a way to kind of close out the show.
Let me just make this point before we sign off here, because you know I'm a millennial. You know, I turned 33 years old this very day, and my generation, we were born in the 80s, born in the 90s. We didn't grow up in the Cold War. Our political reality was not formed by the Cold War. We don't think about nuclear weapons and the prospect of being incinerated in a ball of flame and being nothing but a shadow on a building. We don't think about that the way that previous generations did. I've never taken part in a fallout drill, for instance, you know, or gone to a fallout shelter or anything like that. And I understand those things were basically just theater, but at the same time, the idea that all of us or many millions of us could be dead in a flash is not something we dwell on, but maybe we should, because the stakes.
Yeah, well, I think it's something that has to be thought about. Of course it does. Of course it does. And, you know, as Trotsky famously said, you might not be interested in dialectic if dialectic is interested in you. this is something I don't want to be alarmist, but we need to understand there are military implications of some of the things that Trump is doing. And, you know, the enemy always gets a vote, as wise strategists say. And don't assume how the Chinese are going to react, because there are some vital national interests of theirs in their perception at stake here. You know, Taiwan is a do-or-die issue. You may not like that, but it is simply a fact for the Chinese leadership. Taiwan is non-negotiable, as increasingly is the South China Sea. And I think there are ways to massage these issues, but the reality is if Trump pushes military confrontation while also threatening the Chinese economy, and let's make that clear, that's what he's doing when he talks about trade restrictions and saying China manipulates their currency and all this stuff. You know, and by the way, I'm a trade patriot. I'd like to save American jobs. I'd like the Chinese to play on a level playing field in matters of trade, but threatening them publicly on Twitter is really not the way to get that done.
Fascinating. Fascinating stuff.
All right, so we're getting ready to close it out here. And John, we thank you for being on and bringing your expertise. This was really good, really eye opening. And of course, now we're going to have everybody out when they hear your prediction could be out running out. You know, it hasn't been since the 50s that people were digging bomb shelters. But
get your iodine pills and all that stuff.
Get your canned goods, all that good stuff. Be ready. But we do have one question for you, and this is the one gotcha question that we have, but it's lighthearted and fun. So we do this, and we've done it with like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Star Wars and Star Trek. But we've decided, you know, hey, it's the new year. Let's start off talking about alcohol. So Neil is we won't play favorites here. Well, yeah, Neil's preference is a good cocktail.
I am omnibibulous, but I do enjoy liquor.
Right, so do I. And I am the same way, but if given my choice, I prefer like a nice cold craft beer as something to drink. So John, so what if given the choice, you've got a really not we're not talking garbage, we're talking good stuff, good beer in front of you or a nice cocktail in front of you, which are you choosing?
Vodka, ice cold. There is nothing else. I incline to the Russian view that beer is basically a soft drink. I've spent too much time in Eastern Europe and in that part of the world. Vodka, preferably Polish, Russian, Ukrainian, something. You know, I don't want vodka from countries that don't make vodka. You know, the French should not be making vodka. French should make wine, cognac, whatever. Vodka, there's always ice cold vodka in my freezer because there is nothing else.
Just vodka straight?
Oh yeah, oh absolutely. I mean, I will make an extraordinarily dry martini of the Churchillian dryness. You know, you look at the vermouth kind of thing, but it's basically just an excuse to have vodka. You bet, it's good for you.
I support and approve of this.
I think this is the first time we've done one of these where we had to make the choice where Neil actually won the first time that we had that question.
Yeah, it is.
I think he's
it
actually going to come out on top on this one because,
I'm here to help. You know, I'm formally from the government and I'm here to help. You know?
It's a triumph of good taste. Here we go. Thank you again, John. It was great.
Thank you, gentlemen. It was great fun.
We appreciate it. All right. And that's going to be it for this episode of the Fifth Estate. As again, you know, like Neil said before, hey, go out there, leave us a review, go ahead and subscribe, tell your friends to subscribe. We like subscribers and
I mean,
we really
do
appreciate
it for my birthday, guys.
Yes, this is, we're recording this just so you know, January 9th, that's Neil's birthday. We normally don't date our episodes, but we'll do this one because it is his birthday. So, reach out. By the time you hear this, it'll be a little belated, but tell Neil happy birthday and we will see you next time on the Fifth Estate.